Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Thursday, September 3rd. I'm Olivia Rose. Sea otter populations in Southeast Alaska are booming. They were reintroduced to the region in the 1960s after being hunted to near extinction. But the furry mammals are wreaking havoc on fisheries in the region by eating what seems like everything. Fishermen who participate in dive fisheries in Southeast have been heavily impacted by the otter boom. And as KFSK's Baze Hohen reports, they also have an up-close view of the destruction the animals cause on the seafloor.
So this is a mess, but...
In Scott Hersey's basement workshop, there's a guitar on a work table he's building from scratch and a view of Frederick Sound.
Could show you my dive suit. Let's go.
And in a back closet, there's an old scuba diving suit.
You put a hood on. The only thing exposed is your cheeks and your lips. And after a few minutes in the water, they go numb. So.
Hersey is a retired dive fisherman. He co-founded the sea cucumber dive fishery in Petersburg in the 90s. And when he first started diving in the late 80s, he caught abalone.
But that fishery doesn't exist anymore because of sea otters.
Sea otters were reintroduced to the Southeast region in the mid-1960s after being commercially hunted to near extinction. And the current sea otter population in Southeast Alaska is skyrocketing. The population has more than doubled in 20 years. Sea otters eat mostly shellfish, like clams and crabs. Otters have already decimated populations of crucial shellfish fisheries in Southeast. The region's Dungeness crab fishery closed early this summer. And Hersey saw the impact up close.
You go to a place where it had been a good productive area, and if you saw sea otters around, you go down and the bottom looked like it had just been rototilled, not an abalone left.
Sea otters are a federally protected species under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which means options for controlling the population are limited. They can't be directly harvested, except for subsistence hunting. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is in charge of sea otter management. They declined an interview request, but a spokesperson said in an email that they were aware of dive fishermen's concerns. Jeff Mucci is a former dive researcher for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He spent 20 years surveying dive fishery animal populations and saw what sea otters did to the ocean floor.
We definitely came across a lot of areas out by the ocean that had big trenches in them where otters had come in and dug up the substrate, and they had taken all the gooey ducks out.
While dive fisheries are not a huge part of the Southeast economy, they're an important option for local fishermen. The main dive fisheries in Southeast are sea cucumber and gooey duck clams. There are about 200 active dive fishermen in the region, and last season, the fisheries brought in almost $7 million combined. Mucci says small boat fisheries mean a lot to a town like Petersburg.
There are small business owners. A town like Petersburg needs small businesses to help keep things going.
Alex Schrammick is an active dive fisherman and a salmon troller based in Petersburg. He says that fishermen need to diversify to be financially sustainable, but dive fishing makes up at least half of his income. He's been fishing sea cucumbers for 13 years, and he says otters are harming sea cucumber habitats that he fishes. One example was an area he's fished called Snow Pass.
So the last rotation that we were there, there was a stark difference in the population of the sea cucumbers. And it's obvious that the otters have been there because it looks like a bulldozer has been on the bottom.
Mucci, Schrammick, and Hersey all say they would like to see some sort of management of the otters population. But they say otters' protected status makes having that conversation really hard. Schrammick worries about the future.
It just seems like if things continue the way they are, and inevitably they're going to expand more and more and just continue to reduce the amount of areas that are fishable.
The sea cucumber season opens in early October and runs to the end of March. For now, Schrammick and other divers will be out there under the waves and combing the ocean floor. In Petersburg, I'm Baze Hohen.
And a quick disclosure, sea cucumber fishery co-founder and retired dive fisherman Scott Hersey is a spouse of a KFSK employee. Also, a correction to this morning's newscast, abalones are not clams. Petersburg's hospital has received three major grants from the Federal Rural Health Transformation Program. KFSK's Taylor Hecker reports that the grants, which pass through the state, will help expand work that the hospital has already started.
The Petersburg Medical Center's grants could total over $1 million. but contracts must be signed with the state before the exact amounts are finalized. One grant will help expand the hospital's maternal and early childhood health programs. The hospital does not offer birthing services, but this funding will help develop programs for lactation and childbirth education. Here's hospital CEO Phil Hofstetter.
There's a lot of care involved in a pre and post delivery from expectant mothers to mothers to new mothers, and a lot of care that goes into that, case management and lactation consulting, things of that nature that I think we want to be able to expand.
The second grant will help expand the hospital's telehealth offerings. And the third will help expand the hospital's behavioral health program.
Those are, you know, really instrumental in some of the care services and sort of gaps, I think, that we have in a community and that we've been investing quite a bit on.
Hofstetter says these projects will likely have some overlap. Right now, the hospital's existing behavioral health department already uses telehealth.
The telehealth model really is about bringing services, a hybrid of inpatient coupled with remote or telehealth services. So, for example, we have psychiatrist Dr. Sonkis through our behavioral health that has been coming to do clinics periodically and has telehealth appointments.
Hofstetter says the hospital can use that model to help offer other telehealth services in the future. Hospital grants manager Katie Bryson says the award amounts are preliminary. According to a press release by the Alaska Department of Health, the hospital's grants range between $160,000 and $446,000. She says the hospital will have until the end of next June to spend the money. That's a tight timeline, so all of the grants build on work that the hospital has already begun and can realistically continue.
It is both capable of transforming access to care, but also rooted in work we are ready to hit the ground doing, because we knew that timeline when we proposed the projects. We knew that the projects needed to be complete.
Bryson says rural and remote healthcare providers want to provide more services to their communities, and this rural healthcare funding will make a big difference.
It's often a question of, do you have the resources, the training, the availability to bring contracts in, the support to cover travel costs or to launch projects? And that's really what the RHTP funding is able to help us do.
Rural Health Transformation Project grants are still being distributed. The state has been releasing approved grant projects every Friday. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
A fungal outbreak is spreading among spruce trees in the Tongass National Forest this summer. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the needles might be discolored, but the trees should be fine.
If you've been walking trails near the muskeg, the boggy wetlands in southeast, you might have noticed some spruce trees not looking so great. Earlier this summer, the green needles turned a bright yellow-orange. Now they're more rusty-colored. So what's the deal?
Spruce needle rust.
That's 3-year-old Eli Mulvey talking to his mom.
How do you know it's spruce needle rust?
Because I can see some orange.
On the needles?
Yeah.
Is it busting out?
Yeah.
What kind of organism makes that on the needles?
Fungus. Funguses.
Yep, you're right.
His mom would know. Robin Mulvey is a forest pathologist with the U.S. Forest Service. She recorded that conversation years ago when her son was young. But Mulvey still thinks this fungus is really cool. She says this summer's outbreak is the largest she's seen in her 15 years working in Juneau. It's even on her running shoes.
And I've washed my shoes a few times, and the bottoms of my running shoes are still bright orange. I had spores all over the windshield of my car, on my patio, and I think of it more like a big pollen year. That's kind of the level of damage, and it's just a phenomenon that we can track and enjoy.
The fungus is mostly cosmetic and doesn't hurt the trees. The infected needles will die and drop off, and next year, they'll put out new green growth. It's a natural cycle, but the cycle requires one other part, nearby Labrador tea, also known as tundra tea. Spruce is just the temporary host.
All of the spores that are being produced on Sitka spruce right now, they can't infect spruce. They have to only infect Labrador tea.
How does that even evolve?
I mean, that's a great question. And there are a lot of diseases that have this type of life cycle. This is just one. So we have another one that goes between Western hemlock and blueberry leaves. We have another one on one-year-old needles of Sitka spruce that doesn't have an alternate host. It just goes from spruce to spruce.
So given the exact right environment and perfect weather, these fungal spores are produced on Labrador tea leaves in early summer. They float through the air onto new spruce shoots, which become yellow, then orange as the summer goes on. Mulvey says that's the fruiting stage of the fungus. Then the spores blow back to Labrador tea, where they overwinter on the top of the leaves, turning them purple to orange.
And, you know, most people, when they think about disease, they have a negative connotation with that. When there's disease in humans, that's a bad thing. But in the forest, these fungi are part of the ecosystem, and they're just playing their role, is just doing its thing. And so we can kind of appreciate that process.
Although the Labrador tea is infected by the fungus, it's not harmful to humans. But it's still a good idea to harvest plants without spots or discoloration. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
President Trump says he'll make a campaign swing through Alaska to help U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan.
I will go to Alaska to help Dan Sullivan get elected. Dan Sullivan, it's like Ken Paxton. Dan Sullivan's a great senator. Dan, I mean, you look at the things he's done. He would call me all the time because I definitely know nobody has helped Alaska like Donald Trump.
He spoke during an Oval Office press conference yesterday after a reporter asked if he planned to go to Alaska to help a Republican in a tight race. Trump won Alaska handily in 2024, a fact he reviewed in the press conference.
You know, I won Alaska by a landslide.
13.5 points, sir.
How much?
13.5.
Oh, I thought it was 23 or 24.
Why do you think
13.5 is a lot? What do you think, Peter? Not bad.
Mr. President, you won it by 13.5 points. Why is this race so close?
I don't know. Well, it's close for one reason, that they have a phony Dan Sullivan.
Trump used much of the 3 minutes he spent on Alaska yesterday disparaging the other Dan Sullivan in the race, Dan J. Sullivan of Petersburg. Trump repeated many of the unproven allegations the senator and his supporters have made.
The Democrats put up another man named Dan Sullivan. So we have two Dan Sullivans. And by the way, the other man who had never been in politics, had never voted, he hasn't voted for years, a totally pretty non-political person, I guess, but never had any thought of running. All of a sudden, he's running for the Senate in Alaska. His name is Dan Sullivan. They have the same name.
The Petersburg candidate declined Alaska Public Media's interview request yesterday afternoon. He said he'd been out mushroom hunting and wanted to see the president's remarks in context, but in a text, he asserted that he's a very faithful voter. The retired teacher got 2.5% of the primary vote. That put him in third place behind Democrat Mary Peltola and Senator Sullivan and got him a spot on the November ballot. The Petersburg man has consistently maintained that running was his own idea and that no one put him up to it. A new poll by Alaska Survey Research suggests the race between Peltola and Senator Sullivan is extremely close, with Peltola just 1 percentage point ahead, despite finishing more than 8 percentage points ahead of Sullivan in the August 18th primary. The same poll shows Trump's popularity in Alaska has dropped, with 56% now holding a negative view of the president. It's not clear what impact a Trump visit would have on the race. In 2022, he held a rally in Anchorage to promote Republicans Kelly Chewbacca for U.S. Senate and Sarah Palin for U.S. House, and both lost. For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.